141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Scotland's World Cup hopes are hanging by a thread as more results go against the national team. It's now a waiting game over the next couple of nights to see whether we can progress to the last 32. And Celtic confirm they've agreed deals for Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham to return to Martin O'Neill's backroom staff. I'm Andrew McLean. Joining me in the studio are Scott Allen and Hugh Keevans.
Well, I'm afraid it's a demoralising time for the national side. We've had three major tournaments back to back and they've only succeeded in highlighting our inadequacies at the highest level of the game. Three tournaments back to back, nine games, one win against Haiti. Three tournaments back to back, four goals. Two, if you take away own goals scored by Germany and Haiti. We embarrassed ourselves against Brazil on Wednesday night. And the manager, Steve Clark, embarrassed himself on an individual basis by his post-match conduct. Ailey Barber is due an apology from the SFA on behalf of Steve Clark, but she won't get one. And that's another depressing element of this week.
When we came off air on Thursday morning, it was, I think, a 47% chance that Scotland were going to get through to the last 32, Scott. That has now plummeted to around 5%. It is not looking good, is it?
It's not, and there's no getting away from it. I think we need a miracle with some of the games that I've looked at, which will be ultimately decide our fate and whether we qualify or not. But I think we've got to take accountability for our own performances at this World Cup. I think, for me, I can understand losing games to Morocco and Brazil, but there is ways to lose them. I think individual errors has cost us over the two games, and there was spells where we looked okay, but we just haven't carried enough threat. Both boxes, the biggest part of football, can you defend properly when you have to, not give away silly goals, which we have, and then can we be creative? We've just not created enough. And I go back to the Haiti game, which I said on Wednesday, Andrew, that for me, the fact that we were hanging on the last 20 minutes against a nation like Haiti, and I'm not being disrespectful, but we've got to have a lot more belief in our own abilities, not just have an acceptance that we're just happy to be there. That for me is the biggest problem. We have to change that. And if how are we going to solve that? That's going to be the biggest one for me going forward. How are we going to come away from just accepting that we're just happy to be there? As a nation, we've got to be better than that.
We now resemble a charity case waiting for a handout from someone that will allow us to stay in America and go into the round of 32. But I'm coming round to the way of thinking that it would be embarrassing if we went into the round of 32 the way we are.
You say it would be embarrassing. Would we not get into the spirit of it if it did happen? It maybe wouldn't feel like the most glorious thing that's ever happened, kind of sneaking in the back door, but still an opportunity to get to the knockout stages of a major tournament, and you would need to hope that things would look better if we get there.
Well, you know, we hoped at the start of the tournament.
The talk
was of creating history. And here we are, hoping that four out of six things happen in matches that are still to be played. I do understand that the supporters, who are a different story, the supporters would, of course, some would be flying back from Scotland to Boston if that was the location of the game. But the supporters have been a separate entity, a separate story. The team on the park, we have a Champions League winner in our squad. We have a Europa League winning captain in our squad. We have a winner of Serie A in our squad. But it's when they play for Scotland, it does not happen. It did not happen in two European Championship finals back to back, and it certainly has not happened at the World Cup.
0141 951 1025. Maybe you still want to reflect on what happened the other night against Brazil and you want to get into the details of the game. That is absolutely fine. 0141 951 1025. I know there's going to be some opinions about some of the players, the manager, so we can get into that. Maybe you just want to speculate about what could happen over the next few days, because of course it's a waiting game. We need to wait and see whether four of those six scenarios are going to happen, and then we can get through to the last 32. Or maybe you're not feeling very optimistic at all and you think we are doomed and you think that everyone's going to be flying home from Miami. Let's see your thoughts. 0141 951 1025. Maybe the international stuff is getting a bit heavy for you and you want to get back to domestic matters. That is fine. We'll definitely get into that on tonight's show. Some big news today, Hugh, is that, and I think long awaited news, is Scott Allen can't hold in his sneeze. The long-awaited news for some Celtic fans that Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham will be part of Martin O'Neill's backroom staff, which I think will be welcome news to Celtic fans.
Without doubt, because Martin O'Neill without Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham doesn't work. They put in one heck of a contribution to the winning of the League and Cup double last season, and it was crucial that Martin O'Neill got his two henchmen back, along with Stephen McManus. And why it takes Celtic so long to do their business is a source of mystery. Still not a player in, and who knows how long we'll have to wait for that one, but it's at least a start to get Maloney and Fotheringham back.
The players were back in training today. I suppose it'll be good for everyone just to have that clarity of what the backroom staff is going to look like, and supporters will be hoping that then that will kick off the transfer business.
Yeah, I think you would like to think so. I do agree with you, though. I think there would be a few eyebrows raised at why it took so long with two coaches who played a pivotal role in obviously getting Celtic over the line last year and stood in when the Wilfried Nancy situation didn't work for them. So I think there's, and rightly so, eyebrows being raised at why it took too long. What that then looks like with transfer businesses, surely it can't be the same as last year. You would like to think that Celtic are trying to get business done. They've got guys who they're looking to get over the line maybe in the next couple of weeks because they've got a really big pre-season ahead of them. There's no getting away from it. Celtic did win the league, but it wasn't convincing at all throughout the season, so there's a lot of work to be done at Celtic this season. There's no getting away from it, and that starts now, and there should have been preparation into that. But yes, the positive of today from a Celtic point of view, players are back, and Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham are back in to help out Martin O'Neill.
Well, if you've been listening to the show this week, you'll know that we've been giving away tickets to the Summer Sizzler at Ayr Racecourse. They're hosting a family Sunday race day on Sunday the 5th of July, and then there's the Glasgow Fair family race day on Monday the 20th of July, and you'll get a family pass for two adults and two children, plus drinks and snacks in the cafe. Each day includes seven races, plus live shows and family entertainment. Each show, we're picking a winner at random from everyone who gets through and makes a point on air, and you can pick a date of your choice. It's over 18s only. All the T's and C's are on our website, so for your chance to head along to Ayr Racecourse next month, give us a call now on 0141 951 1025 on the phones, and you could be going there. Right, let's go live to Miami, shall we? And we'll speak to Gabriel Antoniazzi. How is the mood in Miami, Gabriel? Is it slightly more sombre than it's been over the last few days?
Yeah, Andrew, good afternoon from Miami here, perhaps for the final time, perhaps not. That's the permutation purgatory that the Tartan Army are playing in South Beach. You're asking if it's a bit more somber today? Well, it's kind of been on a downward trajectory ever since the full-time whistle, or even since the first whistle against Brazil, really. As we know, we're looking elsewhere in the other 11 groups at this World Cup, and everything has gone against us so far. It started with Bosnia before our game on Wednesday night, South Africa straight after it, but Ecuador yesterday was the big one. I was out here just on South Beach watching the game with several members of the Tartan Army who were still sticking about. And that was the banker, the so-called banker, the one that we were certain wouldn't happen. Ecuador surely wouldn't beat four-time world champions Germany. But in this new format, the Germans had already qualified and already won their group, so they make several changes. Ecuador desperate to get through. I had one supporter sitting next to me claiming for the Germans to think about the love affair Germany had with the Tartan Army 2 years ago at the Euros. Give us a favour back, but it wasn't to be. You should have heard the groans when Ecuador scored that late winner, and it's just continued in that direction ever since. I think it's Senegal against Iraq is the next one we need to tune into and hope that Senegal don't win by a certain amount of goals. All of that, it's 5%, as you say, 5% chance of us going through. After the Brazil game, it was about 43%. After the Haiti game, if you can cast your mind that far back, when we beat them 1-0 in Brazil and Morocco, elsewhere in our group, through 1-1, I think we were at about 72% chance of going through. So it literally has gone downhill since there. And as Hugh was talking about at the start of the show, it almost feels like there's been two separate tournaments, one on the park and one off it. Here, you could argue that Scotland fans have won the World Cup so far in terms of their support, the noise, the colour, the atmosphere, the vibrancy and everything with the locals. But on the park, arguably been one of the worst, especially given what our expectations were. So it does start to feel like there have been two separate tournaments, and the knockout stage proper hasn't even started yet, Andrew. You feel that Scotland's performances might become a distant memory by the time we get to the semi-finals and the finals towards the middle of July. In terms of Scotland fans behind me, there are still a few here kicking about, waiting to see if Scotland are going to get that miracle they're now hoping on. But the atmosphere is very much, let's just enjoy our holiday. We're here halfway across the world. We're probably going home. Let's just enjoy it. Many fans left last night, many more leaving today. And I don't think there'll be many left by Sunday when we know if we're through or not.
That's the first time that we've gone live to Gabriel at Finnegan's Way, and it's not just been packed with Scotland fans in the background. It's quite sad to see. It's like when you're moving house and you just take all the furniture out, you're staring at an empty room.
Well, the way Gabriel describes it, they're looking for a handout from Ecuador or from Senegal. You know, we don't deserve to be hanging around in this tournament. We are only waiting for... It's the death of 1,000 cuts, and we're waiting for cut 1,000 to happen. And then everyone can pack up and go home. I repeat, the tournament, from the fans' perspective, a glowing success, a triumph of decency, good humour, and a terrific support. The team... unworthy of the fans.
Well, thank you to Gabriel. We'll see if he can find any Scotland fans to grab and come on the show live from Miami. Might be a tougher task, I think, on his hands than it has been over the last couple of weeks, but I'm sure he'll be all right.
He'll be. It looks like the last day of holiday, doesn't it?
Yeah. Everyone's just sitting head in hands waiting for the time to go to the airport. Just horrendous, horrendous times. Anyway, might not be the end. Who knows? 0141 951 1025. Wayne is in Motherwell. Wayne, how are you feeling?
Good evening, guys. How are we? All right?
Good.
And when?
What it is I'm still chuffed with the Scotland team, you know. Like, we've went to a World Cup again after 28 years. I was 12-year-old to see them in 98. My youngest boy's 12. We got to watch the Haiti game. I phoned in and was loving life and, you know, optimistic. But again, that's just it. It's optimistic. I love the Scotland team. I love what Stevie Clark's doing. I was quite impressed with the change he made for the Brazil game, with the team that he set out. But again, you know, likes of McTominay, McGinn, Robertson, even, you know, Lewis Ferguson, he's had these moments in Bologna. But again, it's moments. It's just when we play against the likes of Morocco and Brazil in these big tournaments, you know, they're the top 10 in the world rankings. So, like, we set out there to get a result against Haiti. We did do. Did we make it more goals than we should have done? Yes, I was disappointed that was just a 1-0. But when it came to Morocco and it came to Brazil, again, I would like to see them play a bit more football. But maybe it got against them and played better teams, and they've just not been able to produce those moments that they can do at club level into the national side. So, yeah, I'm with you that we 100%, you know, done ourselves justice to get there. But to progress, I wouldn't like to see us progress because I don't know what happened in the next round. I don't want us to get totally embarrassed. The fans have been great. I just want it to be, you know, we went there, we've done well on merit to get there and just enjoy the time that we had.
You know, Wayne, it's not just about Brazil and Morocco. You know, we played Hungary and Germany last game. Everything hanging on that one match, and we were hopeless. And we've had three back-to-back finals, scored four goals, two goals if you take away two own goals. So the overall picture is that every time we go into the major tournaments, our deficiencies are exposed. I repeat, we've got a Scudetto winner there, we've got a Europa League winning captain there, we've got a Champions League winner there, and they are terrific individual players with very good international careers. What I'm asking now is, why doesn't it work under Steve Clarke? We've had Steve Clarke for 6 years now, and the results are not getting better.
Wayne was saying there that he would have liked us to have played a bit more football against Morocco and Brazil, but was maybe part of the downfall against Brazil that we were trying to play football in areas where some of the players maybe weren't as comfortable as you would want them to be?
I think, if you look at the players we have, and Hugh touched on them there, and so did Wayne, we have players who we see in the domestic leagues performing well under top managers, like John McGinn, for instance, with Unai Emery, who's fantastic, one of the best in the world for me. And it's all good saying you want to play football, but to play good football, especially when you're playing against teams like Morocco and Brazil, then there has to be a structure to it. And I'll use a template of what Motherwell done under Jens Bertelsky. There was a structure, a template. I mean, guys landed on the ball, they knew where the next pass is. We maybe played more football, but there was no structure to it. So that's why when McKenna opens up, he should have a pass that just bounces in to your midfielder. It then goes out to Andy Robertson. It should be as simple as that, but it's not worked on. It's not coached. We are the most off-the-cuff team, national team, you'll probably see at the World Cup, for me.
Is that tougher to implement because of the gaps between, you know, training?
With 4 weeks to prepare for this tournament, Andrew.
You feel that's more than enough
Most club teams can get their point across and how they want to play within the first 2 weeks of pre-season, then you put into practice. But with 4 weeks to prepare, we look off the cuff. When we get into the final third, and I like freedom in the final third, but there was a real lack of belief that we're going to go by someone, that we're going to take a shot on. There was just a lack of belief throughout the whole system. I was really frustrated the other night. I still am frustrated, to be honest, because I think with the players that we do have in the team, and I can accept it in both boxes, we maybe don't have top quality players, but if you have a proper structure and there's real clarity in it, we could have got a lot more out of what we had.
They didn't just meet.
States.
They didn't meet for the first time in May.
Yeah,
they've been under Steve Clarke for 6 years now, and the results get no better. The performances get no better.
See, if I'm being honest, when was the last time we really outperformed the team? We can people talk about the Denmark game, and it was a night of moments. We sat here at times, and it wasn't a good watch on the ball. We defended well in parts. They went down to 10 men. They still controlled the game at times, but we relied on big moments on that night, and it was one of the best nights I've had as a Scotland fan. But after that, you're looking to then can we get more? Can we get performance, not just off the cuff nights? And see if you don't have a structure and a clarity and a bit of consistency of how you're going to play, then that's what happens when you go to tournaments. And we've seen it 3 times now under Steve Clarke.
Is it quite a sad state of affairs, Wayne, that, you know, after the Denmark game, people couldn't get enough of the national team, and it was, you know, it was at an all-time high, the interest in it, and then we're now at a point where you don't even really want us to progress to the next round. You don't want there to be another game because you don't really want to know what could happen next.
I know it's quite a oxymoron. It's where I've put myself now, that I love Scotland. I love the team. Every night they play when it's the national side, and I'm always up for it, and I always want us to do well. And it's just us typical Scots where we just have that belief, and we'll never ever will lose that. And the problem that I think us Scots have got is we're riding a high. We just go in thinking we're unbeatable, which we should do. Like, we should go in and go, you know, we're going to give this team a game. But again, like, say Denmark, it was a group game at Hampden under the lights. It's night. It's a do or die game. You know, if you don't win this, you're second, and it's a playoff. So it's one of those ones where we can enjoy that moment. But going away to big tournaments, it doesn't matter. Like, even when it was 98, even when I was 10-year-old watching 96, we just don't perform.
So what do we do? Do we just accept that then, moving forward, and that we'll never get? Because that's what it seems like, that the kind of rhetoric that I've heard since, it's all right, we've got there. How do we change this? Because this is, to change something, there has to be something done about it. We can't just keep going, we're unlucky again. But we'll have a decent qualifier and we'll maybe get, how do we actually change this?
And it's not being unlucky. You know, if we were hitting the bar, hitting the post, VAR goals chalked off, but we're not unlucky. We do not rise to the occasion on 3 different occasions. And Scott's right. You know, there comes a point where you have to say, what's wrong here? Because 6 years has brought no improvement. And I always maintain that qualification for a tournament and the qualification game against Denmark at Hampden, for me, the best international match Scotland have ever played, containing some of the best goals Scotland have ever scored. But when we get to the real thing, the qualification is an invitation to play at the top tournaments. And we've had that invitation 3 times and we haven't come close to doing anything.
Well, thank you to Wayne. 0141 951 1025. Plenty more of your calls to come.
Live from Glasgow and live with the Tartan Army in Finnegan's Way, Miami. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
A bit of Scotland soul searching going on Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Hugh Keevans and Scott Allen. There is still a chance that we could get through to the last 32. It's a slim chance. There is,
I think, a 5%
possibility that it could happen.
We need to win the Eurovision Song Contest and the Grand National.
Will you be staying up tonight watching some of these games, Hugh?
No. I am babysitting two of my grandchildren, and if I can't get them to bed, then they're not going to go anywhere if the old granddad doesn't go to bed.
You can't tempt them with Senegal against Iraq. No.
Iraq are okay, by the way. I watched them against France. I thought they were decent. Did you see that game? France-Iraq?
Yeah,
the one that get delayed.
The rain delay, yeah.
I thought they were good.
A lot of results need to go Scotland's way. We'll get into that across the next hour and a half or so. We'll get plenty more of your calls. 0141 951 1025. We'll try and go back to Miami and speak to Gabriel, who's trying to wrangle some Scotland fans. He's finding it a bit tougher than in the last 2 weeks. I think he's spoken to some fans, but some of them maybe not in the mood to speak to you, which I think is fair enough.
Well, I think emotionally a curtain came down because of the way we played against Brazil. I mean, we were fortunate it was only 3-0.
Yeah.
It could have been 6 or 7.
That's worth saying, actually. We actually haven't got to that. It could have been so much more.
So, emotionally speaking, the curtain came down. The fans realised that here we go again, third time in a row. And, like, France, 28 years ago, we ended up with a 3-0 doing to finish.
Well, someone that does want to speak to us is Robert and Irvin. Robert, how's it going?
I don't mind. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
I've been listening. I mean, I've made a football club a couple of months ago, working for us in a Wednesday club. I was in Boston there for 8 days with the Tartan Army, and the only thing we're going to win over there is the Supporters of the Year thing. I watched the game last night for, they say, about qualifying. There's still 5% left or something like that, but as they say, it's no bye to the fat lady sing, so just hoping, you know.
Is that it? You're trying to see the optimistic side of it, Robert?
Pardon?
Are you trying to see the optimistic side of it, Robert?
Well, I am. Come on, the day since 1974, I'm now 71, maybe. You've got the same age as Hugh or older than Hugh, but you'll remember.
5 years younger than me, you are, Robert. Five years younger.
I remember when you used to qualify all the time, you know, for the past 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, but I think we have to be, we've now arrived at a stage where we have to be more demanding of the setup. As I say, we've got players there who are high achievers at club level, talents who are extraordinary at times, but it's not working at international level. Qualification is not a trophy. We've had the qualification 3 times and we've had the elimination 3 times, and it's not working. We have to get to a stage where you say, well, let's examine this more closely. What's going wrong here? So I don't think it's enough, Robert, with the greatest respect, to say we got to the party. The fans are a separate story. The fans, civility, humour, good nature, wonderful, unsurpassed, unprecedented. But the fans are not the story. There's another football story, and the football team is not learning, is not progressing at major tournaments. Why is that the case?
Because you'd have forgiven some people after the first Euros, Euro 2020, that we got to, because it had been so long since we made it to a major tournament. You would forgive people for just having that feeling of just being happy getting back on a big stage. Then we qualify for another Euros, then we qualify for a World Cup. But going into this World Cup, quite a lot of the players in the build-up to it said themselves that they felt they let themselves down at the last 2 Euros, that they need to learn lessons from the last 2 Euros. So it's only fair that there's going to be questions if it doesn't look as if lessons have been learned.
There has to be a question, because lessons haven't been learned on the biggest stage. And for me, we do have a good squad. We have a really strong midfield. There's no getting away from that. But at the same time, when no player in your squad is really performing, out with Lewis Ferguson, out of possession, then it has to fall on the manager and what he's doing to get the best out of the players at his disposal. I don't think he's doing enough for me at that level. And if we just accept it and we're happy to be there, then I'm afraid it only goes one way. You take the eye off the ball, you start to fall into that false sense of security. We'll start not qualifying again. There has to be demands. You have to, we can't just accept mediocrity when we get there. We have to think bigger than that. And for me, if you want to make it better, and we have to be better, then you'll keep qualifying and hopefully we can start then performing a lot better, because there's no getting away over the course of the qualifying campaigns. We can produce results, not always great performances. Usually if you watch Scotland, you're not madly excited by the football we play. And I know there's two sides of that, out with that Denmark game, but performances have to be a lot better. And if you can get consistent performances throughout a campaign, whether it's a qualifiers, then once you get to the big stage, you would expect a lot more of the same. We've just fallen short again. And I'll take the game into account. Yes, we won the game, but the performance was nowhere near the level that we would expect from some of the players we have at disposal. And that, for me, when you don't see anyone performing to the best of their abilities, lands on the coach.
On a positive note, Robert, talk to us about your Boston experience.
Oh, the Boston experience is unbelievable. I mean, the friends we made, old and new friends. But as you say about the Haiti game, I mean, we get pummeled in the last 20 minutes. I mean, alright, we won, but then the next game we went to, oh my, I'm here. I mean, it was as if they just come on the park. You know, and the boys, as the whistle went, that we're not ready yet. And we was back home.
Robert, you're allowed to be entertained watching football, you know what I mean? And I think we can all see it. We've took part in terms of performances, three of the worst performances throughout the World Cup, and we've been involved in the games. For me, in terms of how we played, we've not played by any stretch of imagination with any real belief or creativity. And that's, I know I might be biased because I like that creative part of the game, but I think we got to want more. And I think fans who paid their money to go over there can accept that they want to be entertained at some point watching Scotland in a big tournament.
It's concerns at both ends, isn't it, Scott? Because it looks as if there's maybe a lack of creativity or ideas in the final third, and then there are pretty basic mistakes going on at the back. So the accumulation of both of those is why there'll be so much frustration.
Yeah, and for me, and what I've seen analysing the games, I feel that comes down to structure and clarity, two words that I'll use. The structure and how you want to play to get your better players on the ball, your Gannon Dokes, how you want to create chances for Shanklander, whoever's starting up front, and how you want to get McTominay hitting the box. That's because when we land on the ball, we never really know what the next pass is going to be, because there isn't a structure there. That's what I'm saying. I think we are the most off the cuff team at the World Cup.
Robert, What happens next for Scotland then? How do you see the future of the next 4 years going under Steve Clarke?
Well, I mean, all right, okay, we played against Brazil there. It was Steve Clarke's fault. All right, he picked the players, but it was two silly mistakes, the first couple of goals, you know, and this gets back the way to, remember Zaire from Germany, we never get beat, but we get down in goal differences. It's carried on and carried on and carried on. You know, this is not a new thing. But we just seem to not get. A lot of people think, oh, great, we're qualified. But that's not good enough. We've got to take that next step. And everybody knows, all the guys that we run about, they all say, you know, we're getting bulked up and bulked up. Ski Flats, we're going to do this. We're going to get this. We're going to, well, hopefully. And you saw him getting interviewed that night, which was a bad time, straight after a game, and he's walking away from the alley and all that. And it's just not professional enough, I don't think, you know. Okay.
Well, that's it. I think, you know, Steve Clarke's old school. Old school managers think the press are a form of low life and to be treated with disdain and contempt. This is the World Cup. Our first appearance at the World Cup for 28 years. Not good enough.
Can you forgive manager, him for emotions getting the better of him, or do you feel like he needs to handle it better?
Your personal conduct, if you want players to rise to the occasion, so must you as the manager. And storming off a television interview was embarrassing for those watching. Should have been embarrassing for the SFA watching the national team manager conduct himself in that way. Can you imagine Don Carlo Ancelotti storming off a television interview? No. He'll just answer any question. And I accept it was a blow, but he must be getting used to the blows by now.
Speaking to the media it isn't as simple as just speaking to a journalist or a reporter. It's essentially a vehicle for speaking to the supporters and explaining yourself or taking responsibility. There are supporters out there that have paid thousands and thousands of pounds that are still out there in Miami waiting to see whether Scotland are going to get through. There are supporters that have stayed up till all hours watching Scotland that will have felt that they would have wanted an explanation from Steve Clarke, which they got a bit more of later on. I know he did more interviews afterwards, but in that first initial interview when he came off the pitch, people would have been looking for a bit more than that, wouldn't they?
Rightly so, as you said. The fans that have spent their money and travelled there, took their families, even all of us back home, staying up late at night, keeping your kids up late at night to go and watch Scotland at a World Cup. I think the least you can do when you come off a... Listen, everybody who's been involved in football has been on the end of a bad result. But you still have to carry yourself in a certain manner and take accountability for a performance first and foremost, because you are the national team manager, and what you send out and how your team plays is down to you. Ultimately, there's no getting away from that. And the very least you can do, yes, you can maybe word it, you don't have to give a whole explanation, but you get through the key points in the game, you talk through the game, you talk about the disappointment, and at least the fans can understand it. In that sense, if you do it in a professional manner, they can take how your behaviour is. But the way he acted after that game, and I think it was maybe the Morocco game as well, I thought it was grossly unprofessional, if I'm being honest.
Let's speak to Malcolm, who's up next on the line. Malcolm, how are you feeling about things?
Well, I'm just jumping in after hearing that point. I do apologise, I phoned up for a different point.
No, it's fine.
Honestly, I feel sorry for Steve Clarke, and that's not me, trust me. But four, five, six of his best players never even turned up for the games that he was meant to play. But that wasn't the point I phoned up for, so I diverse on that one. In 1996 or 1995, the English Premier, or the non-English Premier, set up a system that they have now become a Super League. We've got no youngsters coming through. We're Scottish FA. I'm not sure how much we are paying the head of these directors and the amount of money that we've earned this year for what, far as the youngsters coming through. Who is the youngsters in your teams that are coming through? We speak about Curtis and Ben Doak, two guys. Who do we speak about in the background? When I speak with Navy, the system of developing youngsters, northeast of Scotland, I played in northeast of Scotland myself, we had some terrific footballers, but there's no progression because you have to travel 300 miles or 150 miles to get down there and 150 miles to come back. We'd rather, Hearts have just hired a new coach, but I guarantee you, not one of that youngsters within the Hearts team, they've got to pay 500 grand, 600 grand, 700 grand for youngsters coming for, or main team players coming for, scouting schools in Bologna, forever. For real progress. Now, 20 years it's taken England and they're a Super League. How can we compete with that? And you've got to give our boys a bit of credit. But
I don't think people are asking us to compete with England and the Premier League.
What about Morocco?
Stunning. Outstanding. So for are they?
They're not. They don't have Super Leagues in the domestic.
I do accept that there's a lack of young talent coming through, and Craig Mulholland has now been put in that position at the SFA, where he's got to get around the country and find out what's going on. However, you know, Malcolm uses the example of Hartham and Lothian. If they want a foreign coach and they want players who are not Scottish, then, you know, Tony Bloom has put £10 million into the club. He's promised the Hearts fans that he'll get a title within 10 years. He very nearly got one last May. So, you know, on the one hand, yes, you can bemoan the fact that a lot of players, more than 50% of the players in the Premiership, are not Scottish. But individuals are looking after their clubs. Rangers are owned by Americans. Tony Bloom is now the top man at Hearts. You know, clubs want it to be that way, and clubs are trying to do the best they can for their supporters. And at the same time, last season was watched by more supporters in the Premiership than ever before.
Yep.
The crowds are responding to it and they love it. But at international level, I do accept, Malcolm, that it is a problem, but it's one that will have to be addressed over the fullness of time. It's not an overnight transformation.
Yeah, but Hugh, at the same time though, Christie plays in the Premiership for Bournemouth, coached by a top manager. John McGinn does, captain of Aston Villa. Ben Doak plays in it. Tyler Fletcher, who obviously didn't come off the bench at Manchester United. Scott McTominay plays for Napoli in Serie A, and Lewis Ferguson's the captain of Bologna. So it's not as if we have a team full of guys all playing the Scottish Premier League. We've got guys exposed to high level of football.
Yeah.
And that's why I say it comes back down to accountability's got to be taken from the manager.
Well, thank you to Malcolm. And while we eagerly await for results elsewhere, why don't we take a look back at Scotland's journey through the World Cup so far?
28 years of waiting is almost over. Can Steve Clarke's side create history?
Scotland's time in the wilderness is over. The eyes of the world are upon our nation once more, and now it's over to these players to deliver the biggest game of many of their lives.
Near three decades of hurt is almost over, and Scotland are back at the World Cup. There's a chance Scotland have hit the post again. John McGinn this time. And it is in the back of the net. John McGinn has opened the scoring for Scotland. Incredible.
Listen, we got a break, but we'll take a break all day long.
And Scotland get that win at their first World Cup game back after 28 years. A huge smile on the face of Steve Clarke.
Scotland have beaten Haiti and the Tartan Army have lift off here in America.
It was really emotional because I'd been all over the world with my best friend. He passed away suddenly. We'd booked to come to the World Cup with me, Alan, and his son Evan. And Alan obviously was here to hopefully celebrate Scotland's qualifying for the first time in their history. It means the world to me.
When against Morocco in our second World Cup group match would see us through to the knockout stages of a major tournament for the first time ever. A draw, and it would just about be enough.
They're dictating the pace of it.
This could be an early chance for Morocco, and it is. It's an early goal. 1 minute and 15 seconds on the clock. It is a nightmare start for Steve Clarke's men.
Full time, and it's Scotland 0, Morocco 1, as the Tartan Army's Boston fairy tale has a bitter end here in Foxborough.
The fan zone was wild. I think I must have proposed to three or four Brazilian birds. The game was good as well, but it was mainly the proposals I was interested in.
Did they have any joy? That's what I want to know.
Less said about that than that.
Good evening from Miami. Here we are for the third and final group game.
Scotland are a win or a draw away from reaching the knockout stages of a major tournament for the first time ever. An iconic fixture against Brazil at the World Cup in Miami awaits.
The Scotland fans are out in force once again, and we're looking forward to such an important game.
I'm actually quietly confident now. I've seen the team really positive in the tap yard. Atmosphere's building.
And a big opportunity for Brazil. And Brazil are going to take the lead. It is a disaster at the back from Scott McKenna. Ricochets into the path of Vinicius Junior, but it's all fallen apart from one mistake at the back.
Scott McKenna, what are you thinking of there?
Keep an eye for the cross. Junior heads in to second of the game, and it's Scotland 0, Brazil 2. Opportunity. It's brilliant from Bruno Guimaraes, and it's a goal from Matheus Cunha. Scotland 3-0 down, and with every goal, Scotland's chances of getting through in third place get shorter and shorter.
Full time, and it's Scotland 0, Brazil 3. Scotland will have to sit and wait, hope and pray that results go their way to progress to the knockout stage of the World Cup for the first ever time.
Hopefully, it's not going to be the last World Cup game we bring you coverage of. We have our fingers crossed that results are going to go in our favour. We just need to wait and see. We need to watch the games. We need to hope that it's going to happen.
It's so great to see Scottish culture come to the States and people not just associate it with just being drunk and loud. And this is no joke. It brought a tear to my eye to hear the Flower of Scotland It's sung so loud and see people really enjoy it.
It makes you so full of pride being somewhere so homely away from Scotland. 20 to 30,000 people here, and we've been had such a warm reception from every other team for America. It's unbelievable.
From Glasgow and live with the Tartan Army in Finnegan's Way, Miami. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Scott Allen and Hugh Keevans taking your calls on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We are looking back on that defeat to Brazil. We're looking ahead to some other games that normally we wouldn't have too much of an interest in, but they could be vital in terms of what happens with Scotland next. Scott Allen laughing because there's only a 5% chance, but we need to hope.
It's a nervous laugh.
Let's go back to the phones. Danny is in Hamilton. Danny, how are you?
All right, Andrew. Right, how you doing, Scott?
How you doing, Danny?
All right, it's just a few points, man. It's just Steve Clark for me is just actually no, actually playing the team to their strengths. We aren't a defence. We hit McKenna and Henry play out from the back. It's plain and simple to see. It's just get it up. And as I said to the producer, we need a target man. We can't play out from the back. So to me, Shanklin wasn't the target man. Bites or Adams should have been, but I think Adams had a niggle. But to be honest, the Morocco game, they scored early and that's what killed us. They were actually great. Just to see your point on that, but Steve Clark, loyalty, the McKenna and the midfield stuff, it can't go on.
I think when it comes to the central defensive options, are there really, when the squad came out, I didn't really see anyone crying out for, you know, any big names that were missing out. So I don't really think it becomes a problem with personnel, essentially, because Steve Clark can only pick the players that are at his disposal. And I don't really think there was anyone waiting in the wings that, you know, people thought were desperately better than the guys that were picked. One thing on Danny's point is, and he says that, you know, they're maybe not the players to play out from the back. You mentioned Jens Bertolascu earlier on. A lot of the central defenders that he had at Motherwell last season, and I get it's different, it's club football and, you know, he's got a full pre-season, whatever else, but a lot of those players, I think people would have said they're maybe not suited to playing out from the back, and he managed to do so. So it shows that it is possible to do it. But why do you think it didn't quite work out?
Because it has to be coached. It has to be coached. You have to give ideas. You have to look at how the opposition's going to play. They're going to press you with one man. Are they going to press you with two? If they press you with two, then you need to use your midfielders to then get out to one of your fullbacks. Are we strong in fullback positions? Well, we are on the left-hand side. You get Andy Robertson, as you said, who's won the Champions League. I do think Hickey was a big miss as the tournament went on. We always had the question marks with his injury because he's been through quite a lot in the last few years. So the easiest thing in football is to go long, isn't it? Then what happens? You go long. If you don't hold it up, everybody starts moaning because you're not having any control of the game.
But that's something that a lot of people have maybe moaned about in the past about Steve Clark teams, that they feel that they've not played enough football and not been direct enough. And then when he maybe tries something a bit different that doesn't work out, people are then saying revert to... So what's it come down to? Does it come down to clarity? Does it come down to detail?
It comes down to clarity and having given your players solutions when they have the ball. And that's ultimately how you do that is it's coached on the training park and then it's shown on when you have your meetings, and when national team, they'll be in meetings all the time, so you'll be looking at the opposition and then you set up how you're going to play through them to get your players, your McTominays, your McGinns, your Ben Gannon-Dokes on the ball to then allow you to go and create. Playing out for the back isn't just for a laugh, it's to give you control in the game for you to control the outcomes that you want to go and score goals. That's what football's all about. I think everybody says, oh, why do we play out from the back? It's to make it look, it's not to look pretty. If you're doing it properly, it's for you to control more outcomes than none. If you just go long, then the whole game becomes a 50-50. That's it. Does it fall to you? Does it fall to the opposition? It purely depends how you see the game. But for me, what the problem we had the other night was Brazil let us have the ball because they had watched us and say they're going to try and sit in against us. What do we want to do? We want to try and get them up the pitch to create the space in behind for your guys like Vinny and Ryan, who was on the opposite wing.
We accept that.
And that's what they've done.
Steve Clark can't take the hit for every individual error that Grant Hanley makes, yep, or Scott McKenna makes, or Andy Robertson makes. Harry Kane arguably the best striker in the world. He blazed one over the bar the other night, which would have won England the game. So these things happen. But to go back to the word that Scott's been using all night, structure. Clarity. You know, it doesn't seem to be there. At the risk of sounding like a broken down record, it's been 6 years now. And we're still doing the same things we were doing 6 years ago.
Danny mentions Lauren Shankland. Would any Scotland striker have struggled to get into the game, yeah, just given Scotland's structure? You're then coming up against two of the best central defenders in the world, and Gabriel and Marquinhos. The service wasn't there. Do you think, no matter who he'd picked the other night, that they would have been in a similar scenario?
Yeah. And again, just structure. We're so off the cuff. So as a striker, if you don't know if that ball's coming through or not, you're constantly having to move and try and find an area where you can maybe get a shot away, because nothing that we do is deliberate, and that will go back off the cuff. Everything we do is hopeful that someone's going to produce a big moment. Until somebody tells me different, I've watched enough of Scotland in the last campaign and in the World Cup to see that there's nothing that really looks deliberate in what we do, whether that's playing out from the back or whether that's when we get in an area out with Andy Robertson making an overlap where we're going to go and create.
Thank you to Danny. 01419511025. Let's play this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
A bit of fun to brighten us all up.
Yeah.
Only if you win, it'll be fun for one of you two.
I feel so negative tonight.
Well, we'll have a bit of a breather, shall we? We'll play Beat the Pundit. 01419511025. You can play against Scott Allen or Hugh Keevans. Get your call in before 7 o'clock.
Live from Glasgow and live with the Tartan Army in Finnegan's Way, Miami. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
1 hour to go on Clyde One Super Scoreboard, so get your calls in. 01419511025. As you can imagine, the first half of the show has been dominated by Scotland. It's been looking back in the Brazil game, thinking about what could happen, a bit of just general big picture stuff about the national team. So we're taking more calls on that. 01419511025. We'll take a look at some of the other stories doing the rounds. The big one today, domestically, Celtic confirming that they've agreed deals for Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham to return to Martin O'Neill's backroom staff. Stephen McManus will be there too, so maybe you've got some thoughts on that. Celtic fans, of course, we've heard managers speak for the first time this week at Rangers and Hearts. There's been a signing at Rangers and Ross McCrory yesterday, so keep those calls coming, and we're going to play this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
What you don't want to do is follow John Spencer's lead from last night.
Yeah.
A donut for John Spencer, a zero. He was confident going into it. He was feeling good.
What were the question? Were they
ended
hard,
up with a zero. A couple of them were a bit awkward, but yeah, I think he
expected
just let the pressure get to him. He won the week before, in fairness. So he's got it in his locker, but didn't have it last night. The last time you played, Hugh, the three of us were live from radio on Sucky Hall Street.
Oh,
you did it in a busy bar.
And so I misunderstood the last question.
Oh, you did, but...
Oh, you had a nightmare that night then.
Slightly more chilled atmosphere in here tonight. Yeah. You won't be shouting over some rowdy drinkers.
No, I'm only shouting over Scott Allen.
That's true. And George in Wishaw. George, how are you?
Not bad.
Have you played Beat the Pundit before?
Yes, I have.
How did you get on?
I got beat off Marv.
When was that?
I'm sure it was a Thursday night. It was on the Gordon, and he beat me with one.
Was it last season?
Aye, it was that season there, aye.
Right, okay, because I was going to say that, because Marvin was always pretty bang average at Beat the Pundit, and then I have no idea what happened last season, yeah, and he just went on some ridiculous run where he won 17 out of 17, so it's fine losing to Marvin last season. If it was before that, it would have been a bit more sceptical.
The longest night you have is a Gordon DL Marvin Bartley night, because when it gets to Beat the Pundit, both of them query the time it's taken.
Oh, yeah.
And query every answer that they didn't get correct.
Neither of them have ever lost with any grace whatsoever.
No. I go for a walk around the block when they run, and then come back for the rest of the programme.
Right. It is going to be the... First of all, who do you want to play, George?
Ah, I'm not first.
There we go. Don't like it. You'll take either of you. It'll be the blue side of the Beat the Pundit coin for Hugh Keevans. It'll be the red side for Scott Allen. It's the blue side for Hugh Keevan. So we will put something else in the ear of Hugh so he can't hear us. For you, George, it's 30 seconds on the clock to answer as many questions as you can. Remember, you can pass if that helps you out. Is that all good?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Let's go for it. Motherwell boss Alfred Johansson is what nationality?
Swedish.
Who scored Scotland's only goal at Euro 2020?
Oh, pass.
Where did Derek McInnes start his managerial career?
St Johnson.
Sean Maloney left Celtic to join which English club in 2007?
Wigan.
Who is the president of FIFA?
Giovanni Infantino.
How many World Cups have Mexico hosted?
Two.
Right, we will bring Hugh Keevans back in. Can you hear us, Hugh?
Oh, it'd be great to play Beat the Pun and get rid of Barry Manilow.
Was that what was split? You were nodding your head a little bit there, were you?
Copacabana.
Yeah.
You're not enjoying it?
He's okay, Barry. No Tony Bennett.
That's just your all-time favourite.
Yeah.
Do you know who Tony Bennett is,
yeah,
Scott?
Yeah, of course I do.
All right. I thought that would have been...
I had grandparents.
Right, 30 seconds on the clock for Hugh Keevans. Let's go. Motherwell boss Alfred Johansson is what nationality?
He's a Swede.
Who scored Scotland's only goal at Euro 2020?
Pass.
Where did Derek McInnes start his managerial career?
St Johnston.
Sean Maloney left Celtic to join which English club in 2007?
Aston Villa.
Who is the president of FIFA?
Gianni Infantino.
How many World Cups have Mexico hosted?
One.
The Spaghetti Had was the nickname for which club's stadium?
Livy.
Who managed Scotland at the 1986 World Cup?
That would be Alec Ferguson.
Right, George, how do you think it went?
Flying there, Hugh.
I think you beat me.
You got through a fair number of questions there, Hugh.
Yeah.
I think you got through eight.
I didn't get a lot more than me.
Yeah, he was quick off the mark. Right, we'll go through them. Motherwell boss Alfred Johansson is what nationality? You both said Swedish. You're both correct. A good start. One all. Who scored Scotland's only goal at Euro 2020? Neither of you got this.
Callum McGregor.
Callum McGregor Croatia. Is correct. Oh, scored against Croatia. Ah, so it remains 1-1. Where did Derek McInnes start his managerial career? You both said St Johnston. You both got it correct. 2-2. Sean Maloney left Celtic to join which English club in 2007? It is Aston Villa. So Hugh Keevans goes 3-2 ahead. Who is the president of FIFA? You both said Gianni Infantino. You both got it correct. So it is 4-3 to Hugh Keevans. How many World Cups has Mexico hosted? George went for 2. You went for 1. The answer is 3. Oh. 1970, 1986. And of course, they're one of the co-hosts in this tournament. So neither of you get it. Remains 4-3 to Hugh Keevans. And George didn't go any further. So you had chances to pull away. The Spaghetti Had was the nickname for which club's stadium? Of course it is Livingston, when it was the Tony Macaroni Arena. Has changed name a couple of times since then, but you get that correct. 5-3 to Hugh Keevans. And your final question, who managed Scotland at the 1986 World Cup? It was, of course, Sir Alec Ferguson. It is a 6-3 win for Hugh Keevans. Unlucky, George.
Ah, it's one of them.
Come back soon, George.
I can take a defeat. I'm gracious in defeat. I'm no Gordon DL that queries it.
That's right. There's only one Gordon DL.
I'm told that's your first six of the year. Hugh, is that your highest score of the year so far?
Well, I'm glad somebody's keeping tally, because I wasn't.
It's not bad. It's a good run, I think, you had there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't believe I didn't get Callum McGregor. I can see the goal. We did the show in the East End, didn't we?
Well, I was in the stadium at the time, which was just a bizarre scenario all round, because there was
Colin,
only about 10,000 fans in
was
there.
I had Colin Braveheart Henry sitting beside me, and I've never been dunted and kicked and pushed so much in my life. And then, of course, Scotland scored. And my journalistic background, I am writing down who scored the goal, what time the goal was scored, and I look up, there's not a soul there. They're all up dancing with each other.
I think I remember seeing the videos of it, actually, where everyone else jumps up and you're sitting there quick to make a note, not quite wrapped up in the excitement. But in fairness, I feel like you were wrapped up in the excitement with Scott and I at the Scotland-Denmark game in here.
Well, he was the king of rock and roll that night.
You went through every single emotion.
I felt the same the other night as well. I'm frustrated. Can we talk about Messi or someone?
Right, we'll get on to exciting. We'll get on to some other matters shortly. But thank you to George Unlucky and beat the pundit. What were you going to say?
I've just seen there on the so if Senegal win, that's us. That's us out completely.
Well, it's four of six scenarios need to happen. So if that one drops, there are still other things that can happen. Because if Senegal failed to beat Iraq, that's sort of one of the six scenarios. But also, Uruguay need to lose to Spain, Iran need to lose to Egypt, Austria need to beat Algeria by 2+ goals, Congo need to fail to beat Uzbekistan, and Ghana need to beat Croatia by 3 goals. So any four of those six scenarios need to happen.
So Iraq will get a draw, right, against Senegal. Spain will beat Uruguay. Uruguay have been really poor. I think Uzbekistan will get a draw against the Congo. Give me another one there.
Ghana aren't going to beat Croatia by 3 goals.
No,
that's not going to happen. Austria could beat Algeria by 2 goals. It's a possibility. Iran could lose to Egypt.
And Iran will lose to Egypt.
I think there certainly are four of those six are possible, but as many people will tell you, it's not just as easy as looking at it. A lot of people who put on accumulators on a weekly basis will look at things and say, those four can easily happen. And then 30 minutes into the games, you quickly realise that they're not going to happen. So that's why the percentages are so low.
This is the World Cup that was harder to go out than it was to stay in. And we're about to do the hard part, but not in a good way.
Right, let's go back to the phones. John is in Thornley Bank. John, what have you got for us?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
No worries.
I agree with Scott about the players we've got. I mean, we have some quality players in our team. However, I think, for me, we lack a bit of pace and power. You look at all the rest of the teams, they're like big athletes, you know, they get up and down the park, and I just felt that we lacked pace and power. We do have some quality, but that's what we lacked. But what I'd like to talk about is about producing players. I mean, when I used to be brought up in the schemes, you could just look at your Lindy, and all you seen was people, young people playing football. There was facilities there. There was massive red ash pitches, and that's all everybody ever did was played football. Now you don't see that. Now you either have to have money, where you're playing 5-a-sides, 7-a-sides. You either need a set of bolt cutters to get into some big astroturf park somewhere. Yeah. No ball games in parks. You just don't have the same thing. Now, when I made my first team debut after playing, I played boys club on a Saturday. I signed for a senior team on a Tuesday. I made my first team debut on a Saturday. That could happen at that time. But young guys who could step out of boys' clubs straight in their first team with like pro youth and that kind of stuff, messing about with that. We could all just step into teams. And I think we need to try and get back to that, attracting players, young players to play football. I ran young teams myself, and it was always during the winter. During the winter we were playing, they would be storing there with frozen snorters, snood zone, scarf zone. Whereas if you go and you see a training complex in Spain, you see they've all got a smile on their face, they're practicing their skills yet. We tend to shut down in the summer. So, just what do you think of that, guys?
Well, I grew up on a scheme as well. Danny McGrain across the road from me, best fullback of his generation. Andy Gray, the street behind me, unbelievable striker. But it's a kind of romanticised view of things that, you know, you could, used to say you could shout up a tenement close and you would get a future international coming down. An awful lot of care and attention is paid to young players today. Scott's boy, you know, I know the care and attention that Scott likes to show to his boy as he makes his way. And people are trying very hard. There's a downside to that. You know, Ben Doak got his first team debut at Celtic and couldn't wait to get down the road to England. No sooner the players come through academy systems, the one thing they want to do is get down to England or go abroad because it's more glamorous. So I do appreciate that there are many problems in that direction, but it's not as if the country has turned its back on the development of youngsters altogether.
What I would say is, and I understand John's view, and coming from the scheme and playing on the streets, which we all used to do. I was still playing on the concrete when I was 15, 16. But what I did do with my own son was the first 2 years when I was obviously teaching him about games. He's only 10 just now, but when he was 4, 5, 6, I done a lot of stuff on the concrete to kind of create the things that I used to get. Because I think when you play in the concrete, what it does is most young kids don't want to fall on it because it's sore, so naturally your balances get better, you take more care with things, and the ball bounces different ways, so you have to control it different ways. But what I would say is there's still an awful lot of kids still playing football, especially in Glasgow. You look in all the Astros, as much as it's Astros off, that is just what happens with modern times. There's a lot of kids playing, thousands upon thousands of kids at every age group every year still playing football, whether that's in the AstroTurf pitches, but that's in a structured environment. The one thing they don't do is that free play where they're out with their pals. You don't see that much in the street, as John touched on there. All the schools, all the AstroTurf pitches, you can't go on them unless you're paying £80 for an hour let, which is, there should be some sort of leeway around that where kids can go on the AstroTurf and use the goals and all that sort of stuff. The problem is, for me, and I've seen it at grassroots and I've seen it at academy football throughout Scotland at the time, there's a lot of things that are missed, and it's the small details, which actually when you then look at the games like Brazil the other night, the small decision making, they're taking real care with certain types of passes, whether it's in your own box or having that little bit of awareness, that's the things that are getting missed in this country. Because a lot of coaches can put on a great session, and what that would look like is lots of wee mini cones and wee mini goals and it all looks good, but they're actually missing the key details that make the difference once you got the levels and once you improve at football. And that's the biggest thing for me, which I've seen in youth football in Scotland. The key details are getting missed, which are the biggest things when you become older that separate you from being a good player, an average player and a top player.
We've got to three international tournaments in the last few years, John, which was obviously better than the long spell before that, but despite that, do you still fear for the sort of future of the national team, the level of players that are coming through?
Yeah, I do. And can I just add to that, Scott? I mean, I ran kids' teams myself. We're missing late developers. Now, a lot of these teams go and they scout and they bring boys in for a young age. Now, I used to play in the school team on a Saturday morning, and then I'd go and play for my own team on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, me too.
That's all stopped. So if you get picked up by a pro youth or anything else, you don't get playing with the school team. And then you miss the late developers, because these young boys, they see their mate going away, pro youth at an early age, and they decide, do you know what? I'm not interested in football, my mate's away, I'm not playing with him anymore. Whereas in the schemes, when you played on a Saturday morning, you played on a Saturday afternoon, you were playing with your mates, you were enjoying football. And as you know, when you get to senior level, it's not as enjoyable, because you're then battling for a wage.
No,
battling for your position.
I would agree. I think they're actually, see with the late developers one, and I've seen it firsthand, I actually think they're doing their utmost now to try and protect against that, and they're getting a definite note. The Glasgow teams, the smaller players, are getting a lot longer than they probably used to when I was coming through at academy football, so they're getting given the time, because now they have testing which can determine when they're going to have their growth spurt. Listen, if you've seen it, we've all been young. I remember at 10, 11 year old, technically I was really good on the ball, and then 13, 14 everybody get bigger, and I really struggled for the first 2 years. It wasn't until I hit about 15 where I actually at Dundee United went and played in a tournament where, because I was later in the year, I could play with the younger age group, and I took real confidence from that. And then it wasn't then until I had my growth spurt. So as much as the late developers might struggle advantage wise with the physicality, at the same time you are learning how to use your body better. And then by the time you get to 16, the guys who have been physically bigger than everybody, because they don't have to take as much care with their touch, because they can get there, whether it's through a stride or a bit of power, the smaller ones who have had the struggle the 2 years earlier, they then have all the answers for the big players, because they know how to protect the ball. And that's the part and parcel. The best players usually always find a way into a first team. I do believe that, and the head of youth at Dundee United at the time used to always tell me that. So there has to be struggle, especially for the late developers, but I do feel now, and I would back that up, John, that I've seen that firsthand. Clubs are trying to protect against that and give them a lot longer to develop and understanding that the size, especially at a young age, does have a factor in performance.
Well, thank you to John. Some interesting points made there. Maybe you want to get in touch next. 01419511025.
Live from Glasgow and live with the Tartan Army in Finnegan's Way, Miami. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Scott Allen and Hugh Keevans taking your calls on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Keep them coming. 0141 951 1025. Henry is in Govan. Henry, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
What are you making of the World Cup journey so far?
Well, I'm absolutely kind of disgusted at the fact that how they're absolutely slaughtering Steve Clark. Now, that guy has got us into three tournaments. Right? Let's just say we didn't qualify, you know, before that. So, let's just say I totally disagree with what Scott and what you call him?
Hugh Keevans,
yeah. And I totally disagree with these guys. And there's a lot of, not just other broadcasters, slaughtering Steve Clark.
Is it slaughtering Henry, or is it just the criticism that comes with being a football manager? Because Steve Clark has received a lot of praise over the last 6 years for getting Scotland to three major tournaments, but he's admitted himself that he feels Scotland let themselves down at the last two Euros. A lot of the players have as well. And then going into the World Cup, people were maybe expecting a bit more. Is that not what football management is about? You get praised for the good things, but then the questions, the criticism will come if people maybe feel that, you know, that there's more that could be done.
Well, there's a fact there that, I mean, you're coming up against Morocco, you're coming up against Brazil. I don't know, is it four times we've played Brazil in the group stages of the World Cup?
I think it's five now.
But listen,
is it five? Right, okay, five.
Henry, if you don't want to play Brazil and don't want to play Morocco because they're better than you, don't go into the World Cup then.
But I think part of it is that, see in isolation, if you lose 1-0 to a Morocco team who 4 years ago were in the World Cup semi-finals and they won AFCON, in isolation, if you just look at the scoreline, it's not a bad result. If you lose 3-0 to Brazil, that can happen to any team. But people will point out the manner of it and the fact that in an attacking sense, we really didn't create much. And in a defensive sense, we looked all over the place at times. We were the architects of our own downfall. Yes, on paper it might not look absolutely disastrous and we're coming up against very good teams, but it's maybe the detail in it and
Andrew,
how
the
how
simple
you lose.
Fact is we've got players who are capable of much more, and that falls on the manager. Henry can have you say on Steve Clark, and you can applaud the fact he's got us to tournaments, but we're now on our third one at a World Cup, and as I say tonight, forgive me if I want to be a bit more entertained when we go to a World Cup. The Haiti game is for me the one. I can take losing to Morocco and Brazil, but the Haiti game was nowhere near the level that we would expect with the players that we have in that team. And I know we got the win, but I think we're allowed to expect a lot more. And I think Steve Clark privately would have expected a lot more from his team. But I think that comes down to the setup and how he approached the game for me.
Steve Clark will rightly say, I took Scotland to three major finals, back to back, first man ever to do so. Absolutely. But he's not been slaughtered in any way. We're talking about objective criticism based on results and performances. But Steve Clark appears to take umbrage at the very idea of objective criticism and questioning anything that might have happened, anything he might have done, team selection, tactics, whatever. 6 years, three tournaments, back-to-back, nine games, one win. Of course he has to be questioned.
Yeah, Henry, is it just that overall record at, you know, the major tournaments that, you know, people will think if we get to another major tournament that they'll want a bit more? Expectations have been raised and Steve Clark has been part of that. He's got Scotland back to major tournaments, which is a good thing, but expectations continue to rise. There'll always be that demand to then go and meet it.
But the Scotland fans, as I said, 20 years, they were delighted. And, all right, they're spending a lot of money to go over to America. And, you know, one of the best feelings I ever had and saw was, I think it was two matches. And in that stadium, it was absolutely brilliant.
No one is taking away from any of that. I've already said there are two stories. The brightest story, the most positive story, is the one surrounding the fans, who by their common decency, by their good humour, by their antics with traffic cones, have become loved by everyone. That's fine. And they've spent their money, and it's not my job or Scott's or Andrew's job to tell people how to spend their money. They've spent fortunes. But aren't they entitled simply to expect a bit more from the team that they follow all over the world?
Well, I don't think at the start we would have qualified anyway. But what I'm saying is that the Scotsman, you know, Steve Clarke had actually talked around and said himself, he said himself to the Scotland fans, look, don't get yourselves into debt. You know, go up, you know, whether it's a fan zone or whatever. But he did say, you know, but...
As I say, well, two stories here. There's a football story and a fan story. The football story has got nothing to do with the fans, in the sense that Steve Clarke has had this group of players for 6 years. We've been to three major finals and we have been a severe disappointment to the fans and to the media in each of those tournaments. We're looking for a reason why, how can we improve upon this? And inevitably, you start with the manager.
Is that where things can start to stall if people aren't striving for more and aren't striving for better and aren't wanting the national team, if they're just happy to settle?
It's what I said at the top of the show, Andrew, and that was my biggest frustration. I think now on a third tournament that we've qualified for, going to a World Cup, I think we're allowed to expect more. I think that's a fair for any of us to want to be a bit more entertained by how our football is. No, I watch football to be entertained. I think it's been, three games have been a hard watch, not getting away from it, a really hard watch, and I think any of us who watch football on the daily like we do, I think it's, you're allowed to have that opinion. I think we can look at other nations who are smaller than us, who don't have the same quality of player of us, look more organised and more of a goal threat than we have. You see that with some of the results you've seen throughout the tournament. So how about a tournament where it was genuinely harder to qualify, harder not to go through, have we managed to be in this situation? And at the time, we're all seeing 1-0 is a great result against Haiti. We defended for a life for the last 20 minutes. That shouldn't be happening with the players that we have in that squad. And if we had a bit of more control and a bit more structure, we would have won that game by two minimum for me. And I truly believe that. So if we don't accept that we want more, then it could be another 16 years before we get a tournament, because you can't just keep accepting mediocrity when you go to World Cup finals or European championships for me.
Thank you to Henry. What about Craig and Coatbridge? What are you thinking?
Hi there, folks. How we doing?
Good.
How you doing, Craig?
Good. Completely agree with your last point that you made around mediocrity. And I watched the Haiti game. I've watched all the games, to be fair, as painful as they were. And Haiti actually battered us for the vast majority of that game. And I think, you know, you look at, you've referenced yourself, lads, about, you know, McGinn, McTominay, Robertson, Ferguson, who I thought Ferguson was an absolute standout in the tournament for us. Yep. None of these boys are turning up, and they're not. I know McTominay scored an overhead volley against Denmark, and you can't take that away from him, but he was absolutely terrible for the three games. He was shocking. And actually, if Clarke had more of a backbone, he should have whipped him. He should have taken him off earlier, and you would have had an argument he shouldn't have started against Brazil, because he was that bad against Morocco. I'm kind of running out of what to say on Clarke, to be honest. I don't understand giving him a 4-year deal before the tournament when our form had been poor. You know, we hadn't scored in maybe like 6 games. We played Curacao to get the confidence up in a friendly, and then again we've turned up at this tournament and we were arguably maybe worse than what we were at the Euros, if that was possible. But then what fans do is they go back to this position where they go, ah, it's great but we got there. But actually, if you zoom out on it, we beat Haiti and we got beat off Morocco and we got beat off Brazil, and we would have expected that. But we've been terrible. We've been absolutely terrible. And actually, part of me doesn't want us to go through, because we don't deserve to. And I think the most frustrating part is, and I know I'm labouring the point here, you look at Cape Verde scoring twice against Uruguay and actually peppering them for a large part of that game. Yep. And we're nowhere near that. We just look scared all the time. We don't know what to do with the ball.
I think that's bang on the money. That's basically what I've been saying all night. And as I said, I think it will be split throughout the nation. I think there'll be a lot demanding and wanting more and expecting more. and there'll be a lot just happy to be there. And I can understand both parts of it, because a lot of people haven't seen a World Cup. I was really young when we went to France in 98, so this was the first one for me. And I've just felt dead. I felt flat after the Haiti game. I really did.
I think when Steve Clark says jump, the SFA say how high. You know, for me, business sense would have been to say to Steve Clark, "We'll go to America. It's wonderful that you've qualified us for the first time in 28 years for a World Cup. We'll go to America. We'll assess the performances, and then when we come back, we'll get round the table about the contract." But
What happens then? Because Steve Clark seemed adamant that he wanted things settled before he flew out.
Yeah.
So if that was a deal breaker in any sense,
so what happens there then, Andrew? Well, if you don't get him, I'm not going to the World Cup. That's never happened.
No, not that. But the question I'm asking is, do you then go to a World Cup with a manager who's potentially then unhappy at his contract situation? Is that something that the SFA have to weigh up going into it?
Again, the clue's in the title. The SFA are the governing body. It's their job to govern the national team's affairs. And for me, it did not make sense to have a four-year contract extension before the World Cup even started. For me, they are in awe of Steve Clark. And what Steve Clark wants, Steve Clark gets.
Maybe they feel the fact he's got them to three major tournaments and done what a lot of his predecessors never managed was just enough for him to earn a new contract, which they must feel is, based on no matter what happened in this tournament, they feel he's the right man going forward for the next 4 years because the most common sense thing
would have been to play out the World Cup. Mm-hmm. That's the most common sense thing to do in that situation. And nobody's taken away that Steve Clark has been the man at the helm who's got us to these finals. But that Denmark game, the players got us there that night, because players produce big, big moments that night.
Because it was always going to be a risk handing out a contract before the World Cup, because could you imagine the reaction if Scotland had lost to Haiti in the first game and people have gone, well, you've given the manager a four-year contract and we've just lost to Haiti. It obviously didn't happen. But even at this stage where a lot of people maybe aren't happy with the performances and we're now at a stage where we're having to wait for other results, giving him a contract, there was a risk that this was going to happen, that some supporters would then raise those questions after the World Cup.
Yeah, I think the certainty now is that when the fans come back, when the sunburn dies down, there'll be a retrospective examination of Scotland in America, and that will also take in Scotland in Germany 4 years earlier and Scotland in Glasgow and London 4 years before that. So it will come up for re-examination, and some fans will say, how can you have allowed a four-year extension before a ball was kicked in the USA?
On Craig's point about some of the top players not turning up, he singled out Scott McTominay as one of those. How much do they need to take responsibility as well? You know, how much of it is about them and what they do in the pitch? How much of it is to do with how they are being deployed and what they can do in that system? Is it a bit of a shared responsibility?
It's a little bit shared, but what I'm going to say is, see, when you are technically slightly more deficient than oppositions, say Morocco or Brazil, if you're technically deficient in that sense, the one thing that gets highlighted even more and it makes you look worse than you are is not being in a proper structure. And that's what's happened. And you can accept it. Yes, we've got really good players in their own right, but when you look at the technical players that Brazil have, say Morocco, the boy in the midfield, looks as if he's going to be top drawer and he's going to have a big, big future, Hakimi. But at the same time, if you have slight technical deficiencies in certain areas of the park, if you're not in a proper structure with an idea of how you're going to play, it gets highlighted, and that's what ends up, that's what produces a performance like we've seen the other night, because we do have good players, but I feel that they've been stifled.
Thank you to Craig. 01419511025. Final chance to get your calls in next.
And live with the Tartan Army in Finnegan's Way, Miami. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Final chance to get your calls in on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Scott Allen and Hugh Keevans here with me, Andrew McLean. I've just realised it could be the final 2 hour show of the World Cup. We don't know yet, because if Scotland go through, we'll be back with 2 hours on Monday night. If they don't go through, I think we'll be back to the 1 hour format for the rest of summer.
Can you imagine we end up through? How good.
Well, if we end up going through, that's another thing the manager got wrong, because he said we were going home.
I was looking at some of the other World Cup results last night, obviously with an interest in Scotland, but just beyond that, an interest in some of the players that play in Scotland. Goals for both Daizen Maeda and Austin Trusty last night.
Yeah, I mean, it raises Maeda's profile if it wasn't high enough as it is. So that would raise the possibility of Maeda leaving. You know, the way he finished last season for Celtic, he would be a magnificent return from the World Cup for Celtic, but I'm sure the Celtic fans fear that Daizen Maeda will not be there come August the 3rd in the game against Dundee.
I think one of the games that's happening tonight, Telo Asgard's in the starting lineup for Norway against France. They're changing things up. They've got two wins from two, don't they, Norway? So changing things
Haaland's up. Haaland's on the bench, isn't he?
Qualified, yeah.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for Asgard if he plays well, gets a bit of confidence, goes back to Rangers and has a good season because it was a very stop-start for him, wasn't it? He didn't really perform in the big games for Rangers last year, so fair play, great opportunity for him against France.
Let's go back to the phones. Joe is a Celtic fan on the line. That news today, Joe, I think it was a long time coming for Celtic fans that Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham are officially back. It was first day of pre-season today. Is it good news for you?
Yes, it definitely is, because Martin O'Neill, besides backup stuff, as I said, when I was speaking to your assessor there, boss, they part of the team and they built Celtic out at home twice during the season, so they did.
Yep. Celtic were very, very fortunate that Martin O'Neill, having replaced Brendan Rodgers and got Celtic's season back on track, he was good enough to come back a second time after the Wilfred Nancy fiasco. And the contribution made by Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham could not be overlooked. And Martin O'Neill would be the first to tell you that is the case, because Martin O'Neill, even 25 years ago when he was Celtic manager, Martin O'Neill drew heavily on John Robertson and Steve Wild. So he really needs them. Martin O'Neill without Mark Fotheringham and Sean Maloney would not have worked. And how it took Celtic this long to get it done is another Celtic mystery.
Yeah, it seems strange that there was just such a long impasse, and the fact that it finally got done will be good news for Celtic fans, but it was a deal that almost seemed like Celtic had to get it done, because they were the staff that Martin O'Neill had last season. They were the staff that helped Martin O'Neill have success last season. You wonder where Celtic would have been first day of pre-season today if Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham hadn't got those deals in place.
Martin O'Neill out with a whistle doing the runs. Nah, listen, I think it was strange the length of time it had taken them to get the deal over the line, but I think for me, Martin O'Neill, especially obviously being an older gentleman and guys who he now trusts and has spent the season with and shared success with, it was a no-brainer that it had to be there too. And sometimes when coaches get in his different roles, they would have had a number in their head that they felt was probably worthy of what sort of contract they were looking for. And luckily for Celtic and for the guys we're speaking about, they've obviously came to an end and managed to get the deals over the line, and it gives Celtic a chance now under Martin O'Neill, Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham to get a real good pre-season under their belt.
Joe, I'm sure, would back me up here when I say that the League and Cup double for Celtic was totally unexpected given the shambolic nature of the season, and they got it over the line. The big concern now for the Celtic fans is that finally, having got Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham signed up to work with Martin O'Neill again, when are they going to get moving on the transfer front? Because there is a transition at Celtic that's going to be massive. And right now, nothing's happening.
Yeah, is that the hope, Joe? First day back at pre-season, now that the staff is sorted, Martin O'Neill talked about it at the end of the January window that, you know, it was a collaborative effort with the recruitment staff, with Martin O'Neill, with Sean Maloney, with Mark Fotheringham when it came to getting players in January, that now that everything's in place, that you'll start to see some bodies in the door?
Yes, hopefully. Celtic are reverting back to the old type, and they're dragging their heels on trying to make signings and everything else. It's good to see that the boys, Maloney and Fotheringham, have been put in place, because in my eyes, they were a team, along with Martin O'Neill. They were a team, and why Celtic delivered earlier contracts, I don't understand. So they're reverting back to type for years and years ago. I know they're a good business, we sell on players, good amounts of money and everything else, but they still go back to the basic, as I said, I don't know how to explain it. The way they revert back to like the old biscuit tin mentality. I know they've got a good business model and everything else. They lost out in John McGinn, didn't they? Said, right, we'll give you 2 mil.
That's Hugh Keevan's favourite topic.
I could write a book on that one alone. John, now some years ago, but the last three transfer windows that Celtic have had have been laughably bad. And all of the loanees and whatever that came in the last transfer window, none of them were playing at the time when Celtic were winning the matches late in the season and getting that league and cup double. For example, they paid £5 million for Balakwisha. £5 million. And to all intents and purposes, he was no longer a Celtic player by the time the season was getting to the really business end of the Premiership.
Joe, there's a report tonight that says Celtic have let the option for Kelechi Iheanacho for his 1 year potential deal, they've let that run out, which means that he's now officially a free agent, that if they want to sign him now, they'll face competition. Does that say to you that he won't be coming back? Are you still hoping that he'll come back?
I read that today, so I did about him, maybe he's a free agent now. I would sign him up for another year. Got the talent. Might not have the fitness now as an age and everything else, but he's got the talent. Usually, Martin O'Neill does that.
Martin O'Neill always gave the impression that he had a kind of grudging respect for Iheanacho's talent.
Yeah.
But he never really believed that he was fit enough to do the job.
There was quite an obvious one where he was asked about Kelechi Iheanacho's fitness, and there were a lot of calls from Celtic fans for him to start games because he'd made an impact off the bench. And he essentially said after one of the matches, Kelechi Iheanacho will tell you that he's fully fit, but I'm not sure I think the same.
I think Martin O'Neill may have let the option period run out because he's not that bothered.
There's certainly going to be a shake-up in that area of the park for Celtic if there's going to be no Kelechi Iheanacho. There's a lot of talk about Daizen Maeda, Martin O'Neill. Another thing he said towards the end of the season is that if Daizen Maeda, potentially was getting a move to the English Premier League, he wouldn't want to stand in his way. So if Celtic are to, move forward without those two, it's going to need to be quite a bit of business done in that area of the park.
Yeah, well, and that has been this that has been the same conversation we've had from the last three windows that Hugh speaks about, but the bright spark in there is Osmond, isn't it? I think he's seen how he performed in that League Cup final when he came on against St Mirren. He was really bright. Sorry, the semi-final against Rangers it was, and he was really bright. Looks to run in behind, finds really good positions in the box, and then you see in the last day against Hearts as well, just his movement off the ball. So I think it's a huge pre-season for him. Whether that remains to be seen that he's the starting number 9 once the season starts, I don't know. It might be up to him, but it is they're going to have a lot of depth there and guys with real quality this time, because they were just stop gaps that they were bringing in. We had Chivancheras and Iheanacho was a last minute deal because they were struggling to find a replacement.
You go back a year ago, Andrew, the famous or infamous Karat Almaty Champions League qualifier where Celtic, the beginning of the breakdown in the relationship between Brendan Rodgers and the club, and Celtic even apologised in a statement afterwards that they had made a mess of the transfer window, but they continued to keep making a mess of them, and they have no, to use Scott's word, structure. Who's in charge of recruitment? Who's doing what? The club, they're out of time. The Jamestown Analytics at Tynecastle. Rangers are getting in people, performance director, everything is gearing up. But Celtic, nothing seems to happen on a regular basis.
Well, thank you to Joe. We'll need to leave that there because we are running out of time. One point I wanted to make when you mentioned Callum Osmond, I think a lot of Celtic fans will be excited to see what he can do next season. Do you know how many minutes Callum Osmond played for Celtic last season? 125 minutes, which you think of the impact that he had across those games. No wonder Celtic fans want to see him play more, because he made such a big impact in 125 minutes of football.
That's incredible, but I think that shows you how much of a bright spark he was, and the confidence he'll take for that from getting into this pre-season. He is a good pre-season. He might just nail down that number one spot.
Well, that is it for tonight. Maybe people will be staying up. It's a Friday night after all, so we're going to see some of the games that could impact Scotland over the next few days. And by the next time we're on air, we will know Scotland's fate, because we will be back at 6 o'clock on Monday night, and we'll need to wait and see whether we are going to still be in the World Cup. The games that we need to look out for: Senegal against Iraq. We need to hope that Senegal fail to beat Iraq tonight. There are some games early on in the morning too. We need to hope that Uruguay lose to Spain. We need to hope that Iran lose to Egypt. And then there are more games to come after that, so we'll see what the lay of the land looks like across the weekend. But thank you very much for joining us on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for watching on the live stream, getting involved on the phones. Thank you to Scott Allen, and thank you to Hugh Keevans. As always, on a Friday, the perfect way to kick off your weekend is the GBX that's up next.
Scoreboard.